Welcome to Offline, a podcast about building a 100% online and remote expertise-driven business without the bullshit. Hosted remotely by me, Liston Witherell.
And me, Philip Morgan. You'll learn how we're building our businesses, what scares the shit out of us, and hear from our friends and experts who are building their remote businesses too. Welcome to Offline.
Okay, well, we're recording. Welcome to Offline, Philip.
Hey, Liston, how you doing?
I'm good. As I told you in the pre-recording, I got sort of brace, alternative to braces on my teeth, so.
And your wife is already making fun of you, right?
No, she wasn't making fun of me. She was asking the normal questions about them. How does it feel? Is it weird? Yes, of course. It's strange to have foreign objects in your mouth for the entire day. But if I sound weird on this recording, please forgive me, Philip.
Well, they're the kind that they can't interlock with her braces while you guys are making out.
So thankfully, no.
That's good.
But if I'm wearing headgear, then it could interfere with her headgear.
So you remember a very long time ago, I was trying to find the name of a rapper who has this really interesting voice, and you were no help at all. I mean, you tried.
Typically but, not. Yeah.
Well, I found the guy. His name is Toasty Taylor.
Okay.
That like the worst rapper name ever?
Toasty. Yeah.
Toasty.
I'm assuming that's a reference to being stoned.
Sure. Yeah. But still, it's sort of like a weird rapper name.
I have never heard of Toasty Taylor.
He's incredibly obscure. He doesn't seem to have any kind of career at all.
Okay.
But I was re-listening to this old DJ Vadim album.
Okay.
And he guests on a track. And I was like, oh my God, that's the guy. He has just this like really messed up sounding voice. And let's see, what's the track on that? It's called Truly and Really. It's track 15 on that Life from the Other Side album. I want you to check that out.
Okay, I'm going to have to check it out. I almost want to stop everything and go listen to it, but I don't think that would be fair to our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, if we could include a little bit of it for them, that would be interesting for them, but
yeah.
So anyway, mission accomplished.
Boom. Okay, well, DJ Vadim, once again, making dreams come true.
Mm. So today we talk about sales.
Yeah, the sales call checklist. So I think this came up because you asked me if I had one for your clients. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm sure I ask all kinds of things of you on behalf of my clients.
Yeah, and I just passed it along. So I do have a proper checklist on my website, which I wrote, I don't even know how long ago, at least a year ago, I would say. The good news is not a lot changes in what you should be doing on your sales calls. But one of the challenges with answering this question is because you asked me, do I have a sales call checklist? And I, of course, my question was, well, in what context? And so the first challenge is your job as a salesperson kind of changes through the process of selling. So that's the first thing I want to cover is early on, your goal is to learn as much as you can about the client and really understand, can I help them or do they have a problem that I seem especially suited for.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, you're going to be talking a lot more and showing them how you can connect where they are currently to where they want to be and how you're sort of the glue or the bridge that would get them there. Mm. Now, it came up that Blair Enns has a four conversations framework. And of course, you asked, hey, Liston, do you have something that's like the four conversations framework?
Yeah.
And I wish I did because like it's so pithy. And also it's, I think, maybe gratifying for people to feel like, oh, there's only four conversations I need to have and then I'm golden, right? And like, then I'll get my next big multi-six-figure client or seven-figure client.
Yeah, it really sort of takes the complexity, the idea that, okay, I'm diving into complex, unknown situation. And it says, no, there's a simple framework here. So it's very reassuring. That's what I like about it. I don't get a chance to apply these neat sales tools very often to my business because I'm selling essentially productized services most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or here's the thing, here's the price, do you want it or not?
Right.
So I don't get a lot of opportunity to apply these things myself. So I don't have a lot to say from first-person perspective about these frameworks and whether they work or not, but I can definitely see the appeal of do these things in this order. You can memorize the list. It's short enough and simple enough that you can memorize it. So I see the appeal. You are, I think, about to say life is not so simple though, right?
So I have two things to say about, well, probably more than two, but I'm only going to say two things about the Four Conversations framework. And by the way, in case you're wondering, Blair Ann's recommended four conversations are the probative conversation, the qualifying conversation, the value conversation, and the transition conversation. By the way, conversation, an especially hard word to say with this stuff in my mouth. Sorry, people. If you want to read more about what Blair talks about there, it's all in the Win Without Pitching manifesto. Now, those four conversations, I think those four topics all need to be covered. I totally agree. I just don't know that it's so clear and so it can be that prescriptive and scripted out every time, right? It would be nice if everybody worked on our schedule, but I don't think it's always going to work that way. I think one of the things that Blair assumes here is that you're, if not perfectly positioned, nearly perfectly positioned. And once you start a sales conversation, people already know why you're especially qualified and they have trust and you have credibility to them. Those are huge assumptions in my opinion, but that I think that's what's underlying for this framework to work. Those things would have to be true.
Yeah. And I guess in an ideal world, they would be true all the time. So you're saying unclear positioning or some sort of murkiness about fit is something that would cause a framework like this. I don't want to pick too much on Blair's framework. There are others, I'm sure many other sales frameworks that are attempting to do the same thing, which is take something that you would be just kind of winging it and apply some structure so that you don't feel like you're winging it. Like that's the value, right? I mean, that would probably be the value of your checklist too.
Well, absolutely, right? Because we want to close some gaps for people, as many as we can. And that's sort of our job if we're to be professional educators in some way, right? Is to like give something that's useful.
Speak for yourself. While we're on this, though, I did want to ask maybe one or two other examples of what would, if you went in with some kind of framework, any framework, doesn't matter where it comes from, but it's like step one, step two, step three type of framework. What's going to derail you as you try to apply a standard process to a real world sales conversation?
What's going to derail you?
Yeah. Or what's going to make the framework not exactly fit what should happen?
Yeah. So I think one common thing is, and this is a question I get a lot, is like, what happens if the person just disappears or ghosts me?
Yeah.
It's not the easiest question to answer, but that's a big one. It's like, what if you have a great discovery call, which I consider sort of the first phase of one-to-one interaction? What if I have maybe even a series of great discovery calls, two or three of them, and they're fantastic and it seems like I can help this person and they just disappear?
Right.
So that would be one.
Okay.
And I have an answer, but it's, again, it's not like, oh, go do this and it'll fix it, because who knows why they left.
Yeah.
I think another thing that happens is if your positioning isn't totally clear, or one thing that I get occasionally is people come to me knowing my positioning, but then wanting something different. And then we're going to have to kind of take a step back and figure out like, why do you want that? And maybe I'll just tell them, I'll recommend they talk to someone else.
So that's a situation where their feeling that they should talk to you overrides the clear difference between how you're focused and what they need.
Yeah.
In other words, they're like, well, we like you, Liston, so we thought we'd ask and see if you could help with this, that kind of thing.
Right. And one way to remedy a lot of these issues is to put a big long form on your site and require that people fill it out before they talk to you, which is what I've done. And I can guarantee you, you're going to get less people wanting to talk to you as a result, right? But the people who are serious still fill out the form.
Yeah.
So I think that's okay. It may just be a lead gen challenge. Maybe the problem has been all along, you're not just generating enough of the right leads.
Okay, great. So those are two examples of something that would cause a breakdown in any attempt to create a, just a rigid process that you go through. So you're saying really you have to be able to be more flexible. Am I putting your words in your newly braced mouth? Or?
I think I'm saying both things, right? I think you need a process, but you also need to be willing to kind of throw an audible and maybe not deviate from the process, but expand it in length, right? So going back to the example of Blair Ends, which I do think is a good framework, right? It's pretty much what I'm going to recommend today, but I just don't use the same language he does.
You might want to go ahead and cut the podcast and we'll just link to Blair's thing.
Well, let's put it this way. What he's saying to me is not, you know, other people have said similar things. He's packaged it differently. And, but I think what's kind of at the heart of what he came up with and why I recommend what I recommend and why other people who talk about sales recommend what they recommend is that there is a distinct process and sort of logical way to walk a potential buyer through the process of getting to know you, getting to know how you can help them, and then actually becoming a client. So that exists. The one thing I would say to you is if I'm recommending to have a discovery phase, which I'll talk about shortly, that doesn't necessarily mean you could do it in one call. You may be able to do your whole sales process in one call. You may need three calls for the discovery phase. And that is entirely dependent on, first of all, how qualified people are when they come and how much they trust you already. And it's also very much dependent on how expensive the thing is that you're selling and how complicated it is. So the more complicated, the slower it's going to move and the more sort of getting to know you will be required.
Cool. So what happens as we enter this process?
Okay, sales call checklist. So let's get to that. Here's what I want you to do in every single sales call. I want you to have a sales sandwich. Okay, quick side note, Philip. What do you think is the most important ingredient in a sandwich?
Mayonnaise.
Really? In every type of sandwich? Do you have mayonnaise on a PB&J?
Do you not know that some people love like mayonnaise, peanut butter, and banana? Like that's a sandwich that some people go ape shit over.
Well, I was going to say mayonnaise is almost pure fat. So like, it's no wonder why people love mayonnaise. It's like salt and fat.
Yeah, seriously. I started eating fish recently, so I've been eating a lot of tuna sandwiches. That's why I said mayonnaise. I don't know. The stuff in the middle, I guess, is the most important.
See, I don't think so. I think it's the bread, because the bread is the constant. You always have bread in every single sandwich, and you can forgive middling contents of a sandwich if the bread is delicious. This is my personal opinion. We can have a long debate about this. I did on Friday night.
We're going to start a whole podcast series on this one question. Okay, I'll go with the bread is the most important assertion. Unfounded assertion, I might add.
Certainly we would agree there's no sandwich without the bread, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you get into weird stuff like raw foodists putting lettuce around something and calling it a sandwich, but sure, yeah, no sandwich without the bread.
Right. Yeah, but that's not a sandwich. A sandwich does have to have bread.
Sayeth the Earl of Sandwich.
Okay, so sales sandwich, right? And what I mean by that is you always want to start with an agenda. So you're going to tell people, hey, here's what we're going to talk about and why. We're going to invite them. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about or any sort of other things that you want to cover in this call? And then at the end of it, we're going to have next steps.
Wait, this is all at the top of the call, this sales sandwich?
Okay, at the top of the call, it's the agenda. And at the end of the call, we're going to have next steps.
Okay, so this is, you're really describing the whole call.
Yes. And in the middle, that's going to change, right? But every single time, we're going to have an agenda in the beginning and we're going to have next steps at the end.
Oh, and something different in the middle.
Let's go back to Blair's example, right? Four conversations. So his agenda in number one would be something like, hey, in today's call, I really want to probe deeply on what your problem is. When did it start? How did you know that it was a big issue? What's going on internally that's sort of exacerbating this, and why now? By the end of this call, I want us to mutually determine if we're fit to work together. Do you have anything you'd like to add or change? Inevitably, they always say no.
Yeah.
And you say, great. Okay. So tell me what's going on.
So quick question.
Anything.
I have so many questions.
Oh, I'm glad. I didn't think you would.
Would there be small talk at the...
Yes.
Let's say there's a couple of people on their end and they're not all there at the outset. You're not going to sit silently and say nothing.
No.
So there will be some small talk.
Okay. So we're creating a manual, not a checklist. Okay. So yes.
No, come on. This is a totally well-intentioned question. Here's where I'm going.
Uh-huh.
I have been in certain situations where I am a little more on top of it, of my game. And so I would sort of start the call. There would be this small talk period, and then we'd move into the agenda. And then there's other times when I've had the prospective client sort of jump the gun, and they're eager and raring to go, and they sort of have their own agenda. So when you have sort of a conflict in agendas like that, what do you do?
Oh, okay.
This probably never happens to you, but it's happened to me.
So I can't think of a specific example when it's happened. I wouldn't say it's never happened, but one thing I recommend is that before the call, you send a quick agenda. And so in your discovery section of your sales process or your discovery phase, you're always going to try to determine just three big things that will ultimately tell you if there's a fit.
Okay.
Number one, what is the pain they have right now? Number two, what are their goals? And number three, what is the value of achieving those goals? If you can determine those three things, you know for sure if this person's a fit.
Okay.
So ahead of the call, I'll send them an agenda. And it's just like, hey, looking forward to our call tomorrow. Here's a quick agenda for you. Where you are now, where you'd like to go, and what it would be worth to fix it all and like have the business exactly the way you want it, right? Look forward to talking.
Okay.
In the event that the person wanted something different, is this a specific instance that you're referencing?
Nope. It's just sort of me looking back over and thinking about those times when they just sort of switched from small talk mode to let's talk business mode a little quicker than I was prepared to. And so they kind of got the jump on me. But with what you're recommending, that wouldn't happen because I would have a day before have emailed the plan for what this call is going
to
be.
So to answer your previous question, definitely small talk is good. You got to build some rapport. Uh-huh. And so then I get questions like, well, what do I talk about? Well, what do you talk about to anybody? So if you're in the line at the store, what would you say to a person? You'd say something about the weather. I really
like that mayonnaise you got there.
Yeah, I love that mayonnaise. Man, those chicken chips. I've had those before. Those are the best. Like you'd say something about the experience of being at the store, the food there, or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Same thing, right? So it is literally small talk. If you can go and do a little bit of homework on the person ahead of time and you find that they're into mountain trekking, right? You would bring that up. That would be a good time. Like, what's this mountain trekking thing all about?
Yeah.
But then you would get into the agenda and the meat of it. Now, if they wanted to talk about something different, here's what I would ask. Does it fit within your sales framework? And if not, then you're not going to talk about it.
Okay.
Skillfully, right? Or diplomatically. So you're not going to say, no, we're not going to cover that. I would say, here's what I have sketched out for today. The reason I do it this way is because I've run this process many, many times. And I know the best way for me to be sure that I can get my clients results is to walk them through the process this way. If you're okay with it, I'd like to press pause on some of those issues you brought up and we can tackle them at a later date. How does that sound?
Okay.
If they say no, you already know they're going to be a pain in the ass, probably, right?
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. Great. That was a good answer to my unexpected question, my curveball question.
Okay. It wasn't too bad. So you've got your agenda. So the contents change. So in the discovery section, PGV, right? We want to discover what are their pain, goals, and value. Now, there's a whole bunch of different ways we can go about asking those questions, but don't overcomplicate it. It's pretty simple. Pain. So tell me what's going on. How'd that happen? Oh my God, that sounds bad. You're just going to keep going down that line of thought until you're sure that you understand what's going on. Let's skip ahead. End of the call. Next steps. This is where most people get really fucked up. So they end the call and they go, so good to meet you. Let's say you did discovery and you made an offer on the call.
Mm-hmm.
They go, so what do you think? And the other person's like, this is great. I'm going to take some time to think about it. And then the person who's selling says, okay, cool. Well, let me know if there's anything I can do to help. And then that's it. And it's like,
oh boy.
Well, yeah. All right. So what are we doing? Who's doing what? And when, by what date? And what will that accomplish? We don't know right now. So that this is why next steps are important, is to give your client a milestone whereby they know what they have to do in order to keep it moving forward to do business with you or not. You know, it's fine if they don't do business with you, but what we don't want to do is live in maybe land. We want to know, is this a yes or is this a no? And then move on.
So is there some simple, like, set a date to follow up, or is there a kind of like something that covers 80% of the situations out there in terms of next steps that you could recommend?
So the thing that covers 80% of the situations is to set another meeting until you have a decision.
Okay.
Again, because you have an agenda in the beginning, you're forced to be purposeful about these meetings. Like, what are we going to cover? But in order to be in a relationship, we still have to keep showing up and making time for each other and allocating resources to this sales opportunity. Otherwise, like, it's not an opportunity. Let's just both move on from this.
Yeah.
So 80% of the time I would say, so what'd you think? Let's say I have discovery in the first call and my next call will be based on creating an offer for them and showing it to them.
Okay.
So I'd say, what'd you think? And they're like, oh, this is great. And then I'd say, would you like to talk about the investment? Yeah, that'd be great. Okay, cool. So here's the way I do that. I'll put together a proposal. I'll show you on our next call, walk you through it. You'll have plenty of time to ask me any questions. I'll answer them right on the spot. And then within a week of that, I'd expect you to come back with a final decision. How's that sound? Oh, that's great. Okay, cool. Get out your calendar. How's Tuesday at 4 p.m.?
So you're sort of taking charge of really the whole timeline for this.
Yes.
So back to our sort of earlier objection, like, what if that is the source of a curveball, meaning the timeline? What if they're like, oh, whoa, put on the brakes, buddy.
Yep.
This project starts 10 months from now. We are just talking to options. We're not going to move nearly that fast.
Okay, so that's not a sales opportunity, right? In sales jargon, that's a lead. That's someone who might want to work with you one day, but 10 months out, that's not an opportunity, right? Like, so much can change in that time. So if they said that, I say, okay, cool. Well, what do you want to cover today? Like, what will help you now make a decision 10 months from today? And then they'll tell you, right? Well, here's what we wanted to cover. And then I would say, oh, okay, cool. We can talk about all that. What's this 10-month thing? That's really specific. Where'd that come from?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know what's causing them to say 10 months. Because maybe it's accurate, maybe it's not. I know my business better than they do, and I know how to help my clients better than they do. Otherwise, they wouldn't be talking to me.
Right.
So I want to know what's behind that. But to your point, timing is going to be one of the biggest reasons things don't go as slated. And so one common thing you'll hear, and maybe you hear this also in your coaching, is like, people are like, yeah, I need like about 2 weeks. I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do that. And then maybe 2 weeks from now, I'll have a decision. But you know, as well as I do, they're not going to spend 2 weeks thinking about it actively. They're maybe going to spend like 10 to 20 minutes total actively. They've probably already made up their mind when they're asking for 2 weeks. It's probably a no. So I would just ask, well, tell me what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks. And like, how will that help inform your decision? Because if it's a no, I just want to hear it. Just tell, it's okay. Like, you're not going to hurt my feelings.
Yeah. I like saying, how is this process going to be? How is this decision going to be made? Can you walk me through that?
Yep.
I forget where I picked that up, but it's less accusatory than saying, wait, are you not the decision maker? Which is sort of one of your concerns in that situation.
Well, and like in the case of coaching, the person isn't the sole decision maker. They're probably going to go talk to their spouse or their significant other, right? They want to make sure, like, maybe just get a second opinion, or like, what do you think of this guy, Philip? Does he seem trustworthy? But yeah, you're right. What is your process? That's a really great way to answer, because maybe the true objection isn't timing at all. Maybe what they're really thinking about is, I don't know if this is going to work for me because I'm a little bit different than the people you have on your website. Well, I would want a chance to address that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're right about it. Maybe I'll say, oh, you know what? Now that you're saying that, which is new information, you are right. You shouldn't work with me.
Okay, so what does your checklist look like at this point? We're working in an audio medium here, so let's remind folks what the checklist is, because I have a specific question, but first I want to make sure the checklist is in people's minds.
Okay, so here's, if I could just give you two pieces of sales advice.
Okay.
The first is, start with an agenda, end with next steps every time. It'll help you keep focused and it'll help your client know what's going on. The second piece of sales advice I would give you that will change the game for you is just keep following up.
Okay.
Because that 10-month person or that person who doesn't want to work with you and disappeared, or there's all these people you interact with where the timing's not right, they're not ready to buy for whatever reason, whatever it is. And if you continue to follow up, that's going to make a big difference. So the checklist looks like this. Start by doing some small talk and building rapport. In the first conversation, you're going to have your agenda, and then you're going to have your discovery questions, which are all aimed at getting pain, goals, value. Easy for me to say.
Yeah.
We're going to determine if there's a fit or not, and then we're going to give them next steps. That's the checklist. So I don't want to go 3 or 4 calls in, because that's too much to cover in a podcast.
Yeah.
But in terms of that first call, if you did what I just described, and for most consultants, you're going to need a dedicated discovery session, that'll make a big difference. Starting this way will be game changing for you.
So my specific question is, if no objections have been raised during this call and you get to the end and your sense is they want to do this, they want to do this with me, would you proactively raise some objections just to make sure there really aren't any there?
I prefer not to do that at the very end when we're all feeling good.
Okay.
I'd prefer to do that if you have a one call closed business, which you do and I do.
Yeah.
Well, I do for my sales training programs, not for my kind of consulting programs, but
yeah, sure.
For the coaching stuff, it's basically a one call close, right?
Mm-hmm.
So during the offer, that's when I would raise objections. So in the way you could raise an objection, you could say something like, well, you might be thinking, insert objection, here's one way that I handle that. Or you might say, I've had other clients who thought about this thing, insert objection, here's the way I deal with that. I think it's good to do that if you know that you're likely to get certain objections over and over and over again. To your question though, raising those at the very end of the call, that's if you're going to prompt someone, as Blair calls it, the transition conversation, but as I would call it, just contracting, like how do we now become in a paid relationship versus just, hey, we're two smart people talking to each other, right?
Yeah.
That's not the time to bring up the objections for the first time.
Okay. What if the consultant has potential objections and you would like to raise those?
So I try to bring those up as early as possible without seeming like I'm trying to rush to the end, but I do want to know as early as possible. And so the way I would surface those is just say, one thing that concerns me about this is, and then I'll tell them, this is my concern. And then I'll ask, like, is that something that concerns you?
Right. Like maybe you work with a certain size organization and somebody much smaller approaches you. And so you're saying, you might say, one of my concerns is I am normally working with $50 million businesses and you guys are a $2 million business. And I don't say that to offend anybody. I just, do you think that that's going to be a problem? Is that kind of how you would handle something like that?
Yeah, exactly. So I've been working a deal for months now and I said that in the very first call, but it was the inverse. I said, usually I work with individuals and small organizations and you guys are huge. So if you're looking for someone with a bunch of mid-market or Fortune 500 experience, I can just tell you right now, you should probably look elsewhere because I don't have that. Is that a concern of yours? And she was like, no, that's fine. And it's like, okay, cool. Well, we won't have to talk about that again.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So what have we missed in talking about this checklist? You've really made it beautifully simple.
Have I? Okay. Well,
yeah.
Hopefully I've learned something in the last year. Maybe this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is it. The one thing I would say, though, to add to this is if you move into that offer call, because you may be thinking, okay, great, this person's a great fit. Now I want, how do I sell my shit? I think that's what most people want to know.
Yeah.
The reason that I ask you to dig so deep in the discovery phase is you want to connect what you're doing. You're going to be the connective tissue between, well, let's go back. I'm just jumbling up all my metaphors and analogies. Okay. If your client is on the south side of the San Francisco Peninsula right now, we want to build the Golden Gate Bridge that gets them to the north side, if that's the destination they want to reach. That is our service or our solution or our consulting, is the bridge. And so in order to build that bridge, we need to first understand, where are they now, why are they there, and where do they want to go? Otherwise, the bridge is just sort of meaningless. It's like a bridge to nowhere.
Yeah.
And so in our offer conversation, what's critical is, again, before you make your offer. So again, you're going to start, build rapport, you're going to say your agenda, and then in the contents of it, we're going to connect. Here's a recap of where I understand you are, right? And then you're going to say, problem 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Did I miss anything? No, that's a pretty good synopsis. Okay, cool. Right? And here's where you want to go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Did I miss anything? Nope, that looks good. Right? And you're like, okay, great. So in conclusion, here are the services that I can offer you.
That works so well as an actual synchronous conversation. When that gets turned into a proposal, it always has felt weird to me. I'm taking us down a rabbit hole here, because the other person's not, it's not a synchronous conversation. And I'm not sure that that's the wrong way to approach a proposal, but I see proposals and I'm like imagining myself receiving this, and it's got a narrative at the top that describes the consultant's perception of the problem. And again, I understand why you would do that, and it works perfectly in a real-time conversation, but anyway, I think that's me just pet peeving about proposals.
So I think your proposals are always going to have more impact if you can present them live, because you'll be there to describe your thinking, and there's a much higher density of information transmitted because you're talking, right?
Yeah.
And if they have a question, they can ask. And if they pause and have to think for a long time, you can stop and say, hey, do you have any questions about that? And then you can start to clarify things and sort of make your presentation a living document. The one thing about, I really don't like writing proposals.
Me neither.
Which is why I have templates in the event that I do need to write one. But if you have multiple decision makers, or if you're selling to the person who's not the ultimate decision maker, it's unavoidable. You have to have a proposal, and you have to have one that the person who's selling on your behalf really believes in, right? Either way, you need to have the step of presenting and working on the proposal together with the other person.
Good point.
Yeah. Maybe we can do a whole different podcast episode on proposals, because that's a whole nother thing. But yeah, that is my sales call checklist. You're going to start, you're going to build rapport, you're going to say your agenda, you're going to have the contents of your sales call, which will be the main goals of you being there and your client being there. And then you're going to finish with next steps. And next steps often come down to this. Are we going to move forward in the sales conversation, or are we going to stop now, or are we going to stop forever?
Wait, what's the difference between stop now and stop forever?
Well, stop forever is, this isn't a fit. Maybe you just don't feel a connection with the person, which, like, this is a relationship business, right? That matters.
Yeah.
So if you don't feel a connection, maybe that's why you don't want to move on. Maybe they misrepresented themselves. That's a problem for me. I wouldn't want to work with someone like that. Maybe the timing just doesn't seem right, or maybe their goals aren't something you can help them satisfy. Either way, like, you can still downsell them, quote unquote, onto your email newsletter list, whether it's not now or not forever. But if it's not forever, you feel something definitive, where you're like, ah, I wouldn't invest more time in this person. But often it's going to be kind of a not now thing.
Yeah, got it. Well, you did great with your new mouth hardware. I have some new eye hardware, which nobody knows, and not sure I'm going to keep them, but the folks at home can look up Ruben Tishkoff from Ocean's 11. I think that's really what these glasses are, is that.
Oh, how did you come upon that? Because wasn't your inspiration the RZA?
It was, but I'm keeping it in the white dude domain here and trying to find a relevant example. So right now, listen, I want you to do a Google image search for Ruben Tishkoff, Ocean's 11.
Uh-huh.
Elliot, that's the character Elliot Gould played.
Yeah, I see
that. In that movie. They're pretty close to that, aren't they?
They are close, although yours have much more bling.
I know, which is, I'm not sure that's good. His are just huge and commanding.
Yeah.
Good talking to you, buddy.
Good talking to you too, Philip.